For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
It is December the 6th, and in Parshas Balak, we are on page 874. Perek Chaf Hei, chapter 25, right in the beginning of the Perek. Vayeshev Yisrael Bashitim, and the Jews settled in a place called Shittim. Vayachal Ha'am Liznos El Benos Moav. And the people began to, they behaved promiscuously with the daughters of Moav. Vatikrena La'am Lizivchei Elohehen. And they called to the nation to the sacrifices of their avodah zarah, their gods. Vayochal ha'am vayishtachavu le'elohehen. And the people ate and they bowed to their gods. Vayitzamed Yisrael aval peor. And the Jews literally means they became attached. They worshipped Baal peor. Vayicharaf Hashem b'Yisrael, and Hashem became angry with the Jewish people. Which means that a plague began. There was now a plague that was killing people because they were involved with Baal Peor.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Now, there's no mention that Balaam actually suggested this.
Right. Well, only from before, because it says, I'll give you advice.
I'll give you advice, okay.
Yeah. And we'll find out later. It says later when Bilam is killed, not here, not in this parsha, but later on, it says, because he was involved in this. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Kach es kol rashei ha'am. Take all the heads of the nation, that would be the Sanhedrin, the leaders, take the leaders to judge the people, you know, the ones who are committing the sins. Vehoka osam lahashem neged hashamish. And, looking at the translation here, hang them before Hashem against the sun. Now, we don't kill through hanging. We don't do that. That's not one of the arba misos based in. It's not one of the four ways that based in kills. However, we know that the way that avodah zarah, worshiping idolatry, is as a capital offense, and the form of execution is skila is stoning, and the law is that after stoning, then the person is hung. It's not hanging in order to kill; it's hanging in order to display the person after their death. To show what they did. So that they are hung up. They're not hung up by their neck. They're hung up by their hands, by their arms. They're tied, they're tied up and just put up on a high area for people to see. And then they are taken down and buried. So when it says here, hang them, it means that to stone them and then afterwards hang them, which is that is the procedure of the capital punishment of skila. So you should do that. Neged hashamesh, which means before the sun. As it says here, I'm just looking at how they translate it here. Against the sun. V'yashov charonaf Hashem Yisrael. And then the anger of Hashem will leave the Jewish people. So that's what you should do. You should, this way, this will stop the plague. If you do this, you carry out judgment against those who have sinned, and then you do it properly, then, it will stop the plague. So, Vayomer Moshe El Shoftei Yisrael, Moshe said this to the judges of the Jewish people, Hirgu ish anashav, each man, each one of the judges should kill their men, hanitzmadim leBaal Peor, who have become connected to Baal Peor. Those who have sinned with Baal Peor, they should be killed. So this is the procedure. This is a general issue. The Jews have sinned, and a plague has begun, and this is supposed to stop the plague. This is the procedure of bringing justice to the people for what is going on. Now, yeah.
The way I read it is they're supposed to hang off leaders.
No.
Okay.
No.
Because it just says take all the leaders.
The leaders are the ones who are going to carry this out.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So this procedure was fine and it would work, but we're about to have a singular incident that is going to alter what is supposed to happen. As we're about to have the incident of Zimri and Pinchas. So before we do that, which begins with Pasuk Vav, verse 6, let's examine what we have so far, and then we'll move into the particular incident that happens. So the Jews were dwelling in Shittim, as we mentioned last time. Bilam gave advice to Balak, and he said, listen, it hasn't worked to curse the Jewish people, but if you want to beat them, so Elokehem shalelu sone zima. Their God, he detests promiscuity. So this is what you should do. You should get your daughters to get the Jews to sin. This was done by, it says here, the Benos Moav, the daughters of Moav, but it was also done by the daughters of Midian. You'll recall that Midian was also involved earlier with trying to get Bilam to curse the Jewish people. And they are involved here as well. So the daughters of Moab, the daughters of Midian, they went to get the Jews to sin. As you mentioned last time, ever since the Mabul, which was many, many, many years before this, it was over 1,000 years before this incident, ever since the Mabul, the people of the world had been careful when it came to public displays of immorality. Because the Mabul, the Great Flood, was primarily brought about because of Arayos, because of public displays of immorality. So with the Mabul, which destroyed everything and only 8 people survived, one of the things that people were very careful with when they got out of the Teva after they got off the Ark was to be careful with public displays of immorality. There definitely was immorality in the world. There's no question about it. The Egyptians were particularly immoral. There was definitely immorality going on. But it was always quiet. It was not something that was publicly done. In yesterday's parasha, Parashas Vayishlach, the parasha is replete with all kinds of immorality that went on in Esav's family. All kinds of incest and adultery that took place. But it was always done quietly. It was not done publicly. In yesterday's parasha, when Shechem takes Dina publicly, Shechem takes her and molests her, the pasuk says, "V'chein lo ye'aseh." Such a thing was not done. It didn't happen. Those things did not happen in the world. That was a very, very unusual event that Shechem forcibly, publicly took Dina and molested her. That didn't happen all over the place. It wasn't a regular thing. V'chein lo ye'aseh. Such a thing was not done. It was surprising that someone would do that kind of thing. Because, not because they were such righteous people, but because they were being careful with public displays of immorality. And that's because of the Mabul. Bilam here, in order to get the Jews to be killed, he advises the people of Moab and Midian to have their daughters deliberately behave in a public promiscuous manner in order to publicly act immorally to get the Jews to sin. That is, as the Gemara says, he was poreitz gidro shel olam. He broke down the fence of the world. You imagine that you have something that the entire world is careful with, that they don't do, and one person breaks down the fence. You imagine how deep does Gehenim have to be to atone for such a thing? You imagine? Do you imagine something, forget the whole world, let's say there's something that a community is very, very careful with. A particular mitzvah, a particular zehiru, something they're careful with. Let's say there's a community, and this community is very careful with lashon hara. They don't do it. It's a very careful. In this community, it's people don't talk about other people. It's just not cool. You talk about other people, and people start closing ears, walking away, and they don't do it. Okay, just that community, no one speaks about other people. Wow. What a special thing for the community. And can you imagine one person comes along and breaks that barrier and gets everybody to start talking lashon hara? You imagine how terrible of an avera that is to have broken down the fence? Bilam did that with the whole world. The entire world. He broke down the fence. There was a fence and he broke it. And as I mentioned last time, today, the fact that we have such public immorality, the fact that it is rampant, that there's industry built on it, is all because of Bilam. It all goes back to Bilam. It's all because of him. That is what he did, what he single-handedly broke down that barrier. Now, what specifically happened over here? The daughters of Moab, the daughters of Midian, they had an agenda. Their agenda was get the Jewish men to sin. So they did it in a very premeditated and clever way. So, for example, the Gemara tells us, the Jewish men would go to buy different types of materials, textiles, whatever it is, that they were going to bring home, and they would go to buy. There was a store. The Moab women would set up a store. The store would have an outer chamber and an inner chamber. There would be an older woman who was in the outer chamber, and the material that was available in the outer chamber was okay, but not great. And a Jewish man would come and start perusing the material, and he wouldn't find what he wanted, and the woman would say, oh, you know, we have more in the inside. You can go in and take a look. He would go inside, and there there'd be a young woman. And that young woman would set out to seduce him. And that's what would go on. And she would have wine in there, and whatever it is, and she would get him to sin. That was a premeditated, deliberate setup to get the men to sin. And it was done over and over again. Thousands and thousands and thousands of men sinned, and the immorality did it. Now, there's another element of sin going on over here, which is avodah zarah, which is idolatry. The Gemara tells us, lo avdu Yisrael avodah zarah elahatir lahem arayos. They didn't really want to worship the avodah zarah. That wasn't their goal. The men who were gripped by taiva, by their desire, it was the immorality that they were after. But the problem is that the Moab and Midian women, when they got the Jews to sin, so they would set about to entice the Jewish men. And when they realized they had them, then they would make a condition. And the condition was, bow down to this idol. That was the condition. And so the men complied and they bowed down to the idol. That was because they were interested in the immorality. But nevertheless, it may blunt the sin a little bit, but it still is a sin, and it does not excuse it. And so they did both sins. Worst of all was they became involved in Baal Peor. Now, Baal Peor is a particularly disgusting form of Avodah Zarah. And by becoming involved in Baal Peor, it shows that things had really gotten out of hand. Because Baal Peor is not simply bowing down to an idol. The way one worships Baal Peor, one can worship it by bowing down to it. All Avodah Zarah can be worshipped by bowing down to it. But the specific way that Baal Peor is worshipped is that one defecates in front of Baal Peor. That's the way to worship Baal Peor, believe it or not, is to do that. So once the Jews, once the barriers were broken, there was immorality going on, they were bowing to idols, then it was one thing led to another, and they ended up in a real rut and actually worshipped Baal Peor as well as whatever else was going on. So there was a real terrible thing happening over here, which is why there was this horrific plague that started to kill Jews. Now Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to take the heads of the nation, and the heads of the nation should carry out judgment against the Jewish people. How many heads of the nation were there? How many judges were there? So we know from Yisro that there were Sarei Alafim, Sarei Meos, Sarei Hamishim, Sarei Asaros. There were heads. There was a person who was appointed over 10, a person who was appointed over 50, a person who was appointed over 1,000, and I'm sorry, over 100 and over 1,000. So there were slightly more than 600,000 Jews, men between 20 and 60. So 600,000 Jews, so those who were appointed over 10, so divide that number by the number 10, and you get 60,000 judges. 60,000 judges appointed over 600,000 men. Those who are appointed over, that's appointed over 10. Those who are appointed over 50, so you have to divide by 50, and you get 12,000 judges. Those appointed over 100, you get 6,000 judges. And those who are appointed over 1,000, you get 600 judges. So if you add those numbers together, 60,000, 12,000, 6,000, and 600, you get 78,600 judges. So the number may have been slightly more, slightly less, depending on exactly how many men there were, but it was roughly that many judges. So close to 80,000 judges. And the pasuk says, Hirgu ish anashav. Each man should kill his men. Which means each judge was tasked to kill two men. So 80,000 times two is 160,000 men. That's how many were judged for capital crimes. Whether they actually stoned that many men or not, I don't know. But I'm just showing you how rampant the problem was, that it affected that many people.
People died because of the plague too, right?
So we'll get to that also. Yeah, yeah. That we're going to get to. Yeah. The plague also killed people. That the Torah is going to give us an exact number, or close to an exact number. But just to show you what was going on, that there were more than 150,000 men who were being judged for this sin. The sin of immorality, the sin of Avodah Zarah, of Baal Peor. When the Pasuk says in Pasuk Dalet verse 4, it says, hang them before Hashem, hang them to Hashem before the sun. What does it mean before the sun? Rashi tells us a medrash, Hashemesh modia es hachotim. The sun would reveal who the sinners were. Ha'anan nikfal mikenegdo. The cloud would move away from in front of that person. Ve'achama zorachas alav, and the sun, a shaft of the sun, would shine on the person, which would indicate that he was guilty. So it wasn't just the regular way the judgment is carried out with witnesses, etc., but there actually was a divine intervention that Hashem showed the judges who the guilty parties were. So that is what is going on. People were being killed, stoned, because the judges were carrying out Moshe Rabbeinu's orders to execute those who had sinned. And that was in order to stop the plague. So the Gemara tells us that when all of this was going on, the tribe of Shimon came to one of their leaders. One of their leaders was Zimri. And they said to him, look what's going on over here. They're killing people for this, what's happening. So the Pasuk tells us, Pasuk Vav, verse 6, V'hine ish mi b'nei Yisrael ba, and behold, a man from the Jewish people came, V'yakrev el achaves hamid yonis, and he brought close in front of his brothers the Midian woman, Leinei Moshe, in front of Moshe, Uleinei kol adas b'nei Yisrael, and in front of all the Jewish people, V'hem avochim pesach o amoed, and they were crying in front of the Ohel Moed. So what happened over here? This person, as we will learn in Parashas Pinchas, is Zimri. Zimri is one of the leaders of the tribe of Shimon. He went when he realized what was happening, that they were killing people who were involved in this, and he was one of those who was involved in it, and therefore those who were involved in the sins, they were justifying it. They were saying there's nothing wrong with it. And they were protesting the fact that people were being killed. So he went to find a woman of Midian, but not just any woman of Midian. He went to find one of the princesses of Midian. And he found Cusbi. Now Cusbi was a princess. And even the princesses were being sent out to get the Jews to sin. That's how much the Midian people wanted the Jews to sin. They were even willing to have the princesses go out and act promiscuously to get the Jews to sin. So Cusbi was one of them. And she was, her job, her father told her, was get the leadership to sin. Don't settle for a regular Jewish man. You go for the leadership. So Zimri found her. And Zimri said that I'm interested. And she said, my father told me I need to find a leader. So meaning like Moshe Rabbeinu or someone of that stature. Zimri said, I'm also a leader. I'm one of the leaders of the tribes. And in fact, my tribe is ahead of Moshe Rabbeinu's tribe. Moshe comes from Levi, who's the third tribe. I come from Shimon, which is the second tribe. Reuven, Shimon, Levi. And therefore, I'm an acceptable candidate as far as your father's concerned. And Cusbi agreed. And so he grabbed her, it says he grabbed her by the hair and took her to Moshe Rabbeinu. And he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, is this woman permitted or not? And Moshe Rabbeinu said, she's not permitted. And he said, If that's the case, then how is the daughter of Yisro permitted to you? Moshe was married to Tzipora. Tzipora was a Midian woman. And so Zimri said to Moshe Rabbeinu, this is hypocrisy. You're telling me that this woman is prohibited, yet you have a Midian woman yourself. When this happened, Moshe Rabbeinu did not remember what is the halacha over here. He forgot the halacha. Zimri proceeded to take her into a tent and to sin, but Moshe Rabbeinu did not remember the halacha. And therefore, those who were trying to preserve the Torah, preserve Hashem's honor, started to cry. Because now we have a terrible Chilul Hashem going on. It's not just that all of this terrible sinning is going on, but now we have a leader who is making a public display of what he is doing and is accusing Moshe Rabbeinu of hypocrisy. And so now the stakes were much higher. The likelihood that many, many, many more people would sin was very high. Because now you had a leader who was clearly flaunting what he was doing and clearly showing everybody that Moshe Rabbeinu himself is guilty of the same issue.
What was the law you forgot?
What happens to a person who is involved with a non-Jewish woman publicly? What's the rule? Now, what is the rule? What is the law for a Jewish man who has a relationship with a non-Jewish woman? What is the rule over there? If you go through the Torah, you're not going to find a specific pasuk in the Torah. You won't find a verse that says that if someone has a relationship with a non-Jewish woman, that they are put to death for it. Doesn't say that. It says it's prohibited, but it doesn't say that it's punishable with capital punishment. It's not like adultery or incest, which are various deaths associated with those. But this, it doesn't say that. Now we know, of course, that a Jewish man cannot be involved with a non-Jewish woman, and a Jewish woman cannot be involved with a non-Jewish man. We're aware of that. But what is the punishment if someone acts that way? Well, if someone acts that way privately, and it's not an actual marriage, he's just involved with a non-Jewish woman, then the punishment is from Hashem. It's not something the courts punish for. It's not something that's in the hands of the court. We know that certain types of sins are punishable by the courts, and certain types of sins the courts don't punish for, and instead Hashem punishes for. So for example, if someone does malacha, someone deliberately works on Shabbos, so let's just take an example of work, is they deliberately cook on Shabbos. Cooking is working. So a person cooks deliberately on Shabbos with warning, with witnesses, they are put to death. Who puts them to death? The courts put him to death. Not today, of course, but when we have a functioning court system, then the courts put him to death. That is misa bidei adam. That's death, that's capital punishment that is carried out by man. If a person does work on Yom Kippur it's also prohibited to do work, just like on Shabbos. So if a person cooks on Yom Kippur, that's also punishable with death, but not death by man. It's death from Hashem. It's kares. Kares is the punishment which comes from Hashem. It's not that the courts carry it out. It is Hashem who carries out that punishment. So there's a difference. Sometimes the punishment is carried out by the court, and sometimes it's from Hashem. Normally, if a Jewish man is involved privately with a non-Jewish woman, the punishment comes from Hashem. But what happens if it's a public display? That is what Moshe Rabbeinu forgot. So the pasuk tells us.
His wife was converted anyway. With Moses.
With his wife, Zipporah.
Yeah.
That's what he did, right? No. So Zimri's argument was not a solid argument, but in what was going on, those who were sinning weren't interested in listening to the answer. As is normally the case, right? You say something loud and yell out enough, people just, you know, they go along with it. But Moshe Rabbeinu didn't remember what to do with Zimri. So the Pasuk says, Pasuk Zayin, verse 7, Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, and Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron, he's the grandson of Aaron the Kohen, he saw what was going on, Vayaka mitoch ha'eda, and he got up from among the congregation, and he took a spear in his hand. Pinchas is the grandson of Aaron. Significantly, Pinchas at this point was not yet a Kohen. Why was he not yet a Kohen? What do you mean? How can he not be a Kohen? He comes from Aaron. Because although Aaron was a Kohen, and Aaron's sons were Kohanim, and anybody born to Aaron's sons were also Kohanim. Pinchas was born prior to his father Elazar becoming a Kohen. Pinchas was already born before Aaron and Elazar were made Kohanim. So even though any children born after Pinchas were Kohanim, Pinchas himself was not yet a Kohen. He's going to become a Kohen because of this incident, which we'll learn about when we get to Parshas Pinchas in the next Parsha. But right now, he is not yet a Kohen. But he was a disciple of Moshe Rabbeinu. And when Moshe Rabbeinu forgot the halacha, Pinchas said to Moshe Rabbeinu, he said, Moshe our Rebbe, didn't you teach us Haboel Aramis, a Jewish man who publicly has a relationship with a non-Jewish woman, Kanaim Pogim Bo. That the punishment is that Kanaim means zealots, Pogim Bo, attack him and kill him. That the rule is that if a Jewish man makes a public display of being involved with a non-Jewish woman, then a kanai, a zealot, gets up and kills him on the spot with no court case. Just kill him. You'll say, that's kind of strange to have such a rule. There are a few other things like that, where there is such a thing called kanaim pogim bo, which is that the zealots attack him. There aren't that many things like that, but there are such things in the Torah which are punishable that a zealot carries out the sentence, the punishment, right there. It is not a free-for-all. It's not that this person's involved, now go get him. It's not like that. It's only while the person is involved in the act that they're involved with. The Gemara tells us when Pinchas came to kill Zimri, had Zimri seen Pinchas approaching and Zimri would have stopped what he was doing, Pinchas would not have been allowed to kill him. He could only kill him in the act itself. And one of the miracles that's going to take place over here is that Hashem is going to make it that Zimri is not going to notice Pinchas' approach. And therefore, Pinchas will kill Zimri in the act, which is the only way that this rule would apply. It's a rule that rarely, if ever, applies. But in this case, it did, because Pinchas approached Zimri while Zimri was in the act. Not only that, this is even more surprising, not only that, but we know that the rule is, if someone is coming to attack you, then you have license to attack first, to defend yourself. That's the rule. Haba lahar gecha, hashkem lahar go. If someone's coming to kill you, kill him first. That's the rule, a preemptive strike. That's the rule in the Torah, that you should kill someone who's coming to kill you. A preemptive strike. That's the rule. This applies even in this case. Since the killing that is going to take place is not in court, then the rule is that the victim is the sinner, has the right to defend himself, because this is outside of court. If the court rules that a person is going to be executed, so then that person does not have the right to defend himself. It is a court ruling that the person is now chayav misa. They need to be executed. But this is not a court ruling. And therefore, Zimri could have legally defended himself had he noticed Pinchas approaching. Again, he's not gonna notice Pinchas approaching. And that's, again, that is one of the miracles that's going to take place over here, that Hashem is not going to allow Zimri to know that Pinchas is approaching, and therefore Pinchas will catch Zimri in the act, and Zimri will not defend himself. Now, the pasuk tells us that Pinchas got up mitoch ha'edah, from among the congregation. Very often, the word Eidah, which means congregation, refers to the Beis HaMedrash. It refers to the learning. It refers to studying Torah with the group that is studying Torah. It says he got up from the Beis HaMedrash, and he took a spear in his hand. We derive from here a halacha. This is a real halacha, a real law, which most people find surprising, which is, it is prohibited to have a weapon in a shul or in a Beis HaMedrash. One is not allowed to have a weapon in a shul or a Beis HaMedrash. That's why it says he got up from the congregation and took a spear. He didn't have the spear with him in the Beis HaMedrash. You're not allowed to have a weapon. Which then opens up the question of, is it permitted for a person to carry a weapon, a firearm, in a shul or in a Beis Medrash? As much as that might be if the rule is that the person is not allowed to, that would affect a lot of people, particularly here in Atlanta, Georgia, who do carry firearms with them in a shul and in a Beis Medrash. So this is discussed in halacha of what is and is not permitted. Some say that the only prohibition of carrying a weapon in a shul or a Beis Medrash is only if the weapon is non-concealed. But if it is concealed, it is permitted. And if that's so, then that would be why it would be permitted for a person to carry a concealed weapon in a shul or a Beis Medrash. Pinchas, here, a spear is hard to conceal, although we're going to see in a minute he does conceal it, but in the Beis Medrash, he did not have it with him because it would have been open and not concealed. Everybody agrees if it is a situation of pikuach nefashos, if it's a situation where there's an imminent danger to life, then one can certainly have a weapon in a shul or a Beis Medrash that is non-concealed. But it would have to be an imminent danger, and that, of course, opens up a whole can of worms, whether any particular situation is considered an imminent danger or not, which that you can debate from here till tomorrow. But a concealed weapon, we rely on that opinion that a concealed weapon is permitted. That's primarily the opinion that is relied upon for those who carry a weapon today in a shul or a Beis Medrash. Question? No. Okay. So, Pinchas got up and took a spear. Now, it wasn't so simple for Pinchas to approach the tent in which Zimri was with Cusby, because it was a public display, and because there was an interest in those who were sinning that this be done, because this was going to show once and for all, this is permitted, this is what we do, don't tell us that we can't do it. There was a lot of heated emotion going on around the whole thing. And therefore, Zimri and Cosby were in the tent, but outside the tent, there were members of Shimon's tribe who were armed and who were making sure that no one tried to stop Zimri. So had Pinchas approached with a spear, he certainly would have been attacked by those who were outside of the tent. They were interested in this being a public display, and this being something everybody knew what was going on. They didn't actually see, because they were in a tent, but still, everybody knew what was happening, and it was meant to be this public display of immorality. So what Pinchas did is he took this spear, and he put it in a wooden covering, so that it made it look like a walking stick. That's what he made it look like. It made this spear appear to be like a staff, a walking stick. And he used it as a walking stick, and he approached that tent, the kuba as it is called, which they translate here as, we'll have it in a minute, the tent. And he said to the people of Shimon's tribe who were guarding the tent, he said, is only the tribe of Shimon gets to do this? The tribe of Levi doesn't get to do this? He's from Levi, he's a Kohen. Or he's not yet a Kohen, but he's from Aaron. So he says, what? Where do we find that Shimon's tribe gets to be better than Levi's tribe? I don't also get a chance? So they said, Pinchas, he's on our side. He's switched sides. Okay, let him in. So they stepped aside to let Pinchas in. When he stepped into the tent, then he pulled out the sword, the spear. So the Pasuk says, Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Vayavo achar ish Yisrael el hakuba, and he came after the Jewish man into the tent, Vayidkor es shenehem, and he speared the two of them, es ish Yisrael ves ha'isha el kavasa, the man and the woman, and it says into her stomach. That's the el kavasa. That is that could be a translation. The more accurate translation is in the genitalia. He speared them precisely, both of them, in the genitalia. Vateatzara magefa me'al b'nei Yisrael, and the plague was halted from upon the children of Israel. The Gemara says many miracles took place when Pinchas did this. Pinchas, as I already mentioned, had Zimri saw him approaching, Zimri could have defended himself. And had he Zimri stopped, Pinchas would not have been allowed to kill him. But Zimri did not see him approaching, even though it was pretty obvious. He came into the tent. But more than that, the Gemara tells us, he managed to spear them precisely in the organs with which they were doing the sin. The Gemara tells us that the tent miraculously was lifted up so people could see what was happening. And the spear was strong enough to lift up Zimri and Cosby. And everybody saw, look where the spear went. Look what he did. Look how he killed them. And everybody saw what happened. And the plague stopped. With that was the end of the plague. It stopped. And the last pasuk says, "Vayu amesim b'magefa," and the amount of people who died in the plague, "Arba'av esrim alef," 24,000 people died in the plague, and it was stopped by Pinchas. Pinchas stopped the plague with this heroic act of killing Zimri and Cusbi with one spear, with one killing with this spear. It was so dramatic the way it happened that it was difficult for anybody to deny the divine intervention over here. That Pinchas managed to do what he did, it should have been impossible. Even if he managed to kill Zimri, there should have been a scuffle. And even if there wasn't a scuffle, he should have only been able to kill one, not both. Even if he was able to kill both, that he was able to kill them precisely in that part of the body, that's not easy to do, to be able to figure out exactly how to do that. And then to be able to lift them up like that, and then the tent is removed and everybody could see, and Pinchas threw them down, and he said, because of this, 24,000 people were killed amongst the Jewish people. And the plague stopped. Now, Pinchas is therefore going to be remembered for good. As we begin the next parashas, we'll see. Hashem is going to be very kiviyachol, so to speak, pleased with Pinchas's behavior. Pinchas is forever after known as the Kanoi, as the zealot. And that he did this, and he did the right thing. I neglected to mention before that when Pinchas said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you taught us that the rule is that Haboel Aramis, somebody who makes a public display of having a relationship with a non-Jewish woman, Kanoim Pogimbo, the zealots should attack him. Moshe Rabbeinu said to Pinchas, Karaina de Igrisa, the one who reads the letter, Ihu lehave parvanka. He should be the one to carry it out. Because really, Moshe Rabbeinu could have done this. Once the law was known, Moshe Rabbeinu could have been the Kanai, he could have been the zealot and gone and killed Zimri and Cusbi. But Moshe Rabbeinu told Pinchas, oh, you remembered? You're the reader of the letter? You carry it out. Ihu lehave parvanka. You should do it. Moshe Rabbeinu understood the fact that he forgot and Pinchas remembered, that also was divine. That came from Hashem. That Pinchas should be the one to carry out this sentence. That Pinchas was now going to leave his mark on Klal Yisrael. Pinchas was now going to become known where he wasn't known before. Pinchas is a significant figure in the Jewish people.
Is the first time he's mentioned.
He was mentioned earlier when he was born. He was mentioned earlier. He's a significant figure in the Jewish people because after Aaron's death, which takes place, we had it earlier in Parashas Chukas, he is succeeded in Kohen Gadol by his son Elazar, becomes the Kohen Gadol. After Elazar passes away in Sefer Yehoshua, the third Kohen Gadol of the Jewish people is Pinchas. So Pinchas is a significant person, and here is where he becomes known, with this act. And Moshe Rabbeinu understood that if Moshe Rabbeinu himself forgot the rule, and Pinchas remembered, then Pinchas should be the one to carry it out. And that's what happens. It was very courageous, because Zimri was a leader, and Zimri was a popular leader. And many people rallied around Zimri. And when Pinchas did this, it wasn't like Pinchas was suddenly a hero. He was a hero as far as Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned, and as far as those who were trying to uphold the Torah was concerned, but there were many, many, many people who felt that Pinchas behaved inappropriately. Even those who believed that what Zimri was doing was wrong, they felt Pinchas acted out of turn. That this was the wrong thing to do. In other words, who are you to get up and think you can go and attack such a great person like Zimri? Well, who do you think you are? It was that kind of reaction. It was very courageous for Pinchas to do what he did. So we will see, Mirtz Hashem, when we start Parshas Pinchas, which is the next Parsha, how that dynamic plays out and how Hashem has to step in and make it clear that Pinchas's action was appropriate and in fact was the thing that stopped the plague. So that we will see Mirtz Hashem next time.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.